I'm jealous. I want to see his passport.
Do you?
He doesn't have a dick pic as his profile picture on his passport.
That's what I want to know.
Have you lost your mind?
Hello, welcome to the Antisocial Justice Podcast. I'm Zoe, ZoeJen _ on Twitter. With me today is John, who is feeling very ill with man flu, but are you going to say hello?
Hello. I'm John.
Poor baby. Okay, but luckily, if you can't talk today, you've got a special guest, a mystery guest. Are you going to introduce yourself, mystery guest?
No.
Wouldn't be much of a mystery, would it?
Completely unmysterious.
It would be. Maybe we shouldn't keep it quite so mysterious that nobody knows who you are, though.
No, just never say who I am. That'd be great.
All right.
Yeah.
If people have been paying attention, they should know who you are, because we can give one clue. They should recognize your voice.
Well, I would just it kind of screws up. We've got the show notes that we make for like what we're going to talk about, just brief bullet point sort of thing, and it's ask guest about himself. Ask him some one particular thing about himself, and then plug his thing that he does. So that'll ruin the entire opening of the show if we can't reference who you are.
Oh, fine. Yeah, fine. Very well then.
Why don't you tell everyone who you are?
Oh, I'm Damien Reinhart of the Oklahoma Atheist Godcast.
You are fantastic. Welcome to our podcast. This is only our second guest. With the first time we had a guest, we didn't manage to control him very well. So hopefully this will be a little bit more of a civilized chat.
Neil's had a bit of a thing recently. He's deserted Twitter.
I know.
I didn't quite get the story on that.
That
I just
was
saw
really
the tweet
sad,
saying
actually.
That he was leaving Twitter, or the internet.
But stopping his podcast too.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
which he loved.
What happened? It's just he got overwhelmed with personal issues?
He said it was a mixture of real-life stuff and internet. Well, I won't use the words he used, but expletives.
Yeah, but one thing is taking a break from Twitter, but what I was really surprised by was that he was never going to do another podcast. I mean, that the whole atheist thing maybe got a bit intense, but what about Red Dwarf?
Right.
You wouldn't think that would be problematic.
It might be just a heat-of-the-moment thing. He might come back at some point. Who knows?
Mm. Yeah, he might do, hopefully.
He might fail to stick to flaps.
So we've got down Zoe's very well thought out show notes. Ask Damien about himself. Now that we know it's Damien, we can ask him. The one thing I wanted to ask is, do you just look for people to antagonise? Because it seems to be something you're very good at.
Oh yeah, I don't really have to look.
Well, that's a good point.
They're just there saying stupid things on Twitter. What am I supposed to do? Not antagonise them?
The one good and bad thing about Damien is that he will actually antagonise indiscriminately. I've seen him call out people, including myself, regardless of what side of the fence they're on or the quote rift. So, I mean, like I say, it's a good thing in general, but it's not so good when you're the one that's been questioned.
Well, what's the point in just calling out one side? How's that going to make anything better or fun?
Is that what Twitter's about, making it better? I thought it was a popularity contest.
And how can we get closer to... How can we ever get better at thinking if we only call out one side? That's just weird.
It is a good point.
Not very skeptic.
I know. I think that's a good point if you're just talking about things that are specifically topics. But where I think it's a bit difficult is just the idea that you've got loyalty to some people. There are some people that you consider friends, and then there are some people that might be saying stupid stuff that you don't know who they are. I personally wouldn't. It would take quite a lot for me to start an argument with somebody that I thought was a friend.
Well, if my friends are wrong about something, they're the ones I want to help first.
Right. And how does that work out, though? Do they feel helped? Do they thank you?
If someone I like is saying something stupid, that's like a much more urgent, I want to help them first and say, hey, you know, have you considered that you completely forgot to look at this evidence over here?
Have you considered that you may be a moron?
Well, I don't do that. I don't say it like that. It's just that, you know, like occasionally people will say really dumb things. It's like they haven't, you know, they don't have the background information, and I try to get them to think more about it.
No, it's good. It's I do like the fact that you're one of the few very unbiased people that I associate with.
I don't. I feel much more comfortable with people that have a strong bias in my favor. but tell me something. You're married. What did your wife think about that? If you point out to her that she hasn't thought about everything properly, and here's some more evidence she might like to consider, how well does that go over? My husband is like that with me. I've never thanked him.
I hope she doesn't listen to your show, but...
It's a bit unlikely, isn't it?
Yeah, probably. She has no interest at all in the atheist stuff.
We have 8 listeners.
Okay. Well, you're one of them. There's 7.
Yeah.
She doesn't love it. One time I drank a bottle of homeopathic something right in front of her. Because she purchased it and didn't realize what it was.
Otherwise known as water.
I just drank the whole thing. Yeah, and she was not impressed or pleased about that. But,
was it because you were proving her wrong, or was it because it cost like $18 for the bottle? It's not so much
she was annoyed with my self-righteousness and the fact that she overpaid for, you know, water.
That's what I mean. Was it the fact that you were pointing out her?
She's annoyed with me.
Sorry, that's my coffee machine.
Right, I thought something had gone wrong with the audio. Yeah, that's what I mean, though. Was it that she was annoyed that you were pointing out something she'd done wrong, or was it she was annoyed that you just wasted a bottle that she spent $20 on?
Yeah, it was all that. I admit I can be a bit condescending sometimes, but I really just want to have an argument. I just want to have, you know, have it out. And sometimes I'll take the wrong side of the argument on purpose, because...
Yeah.
You know, better to have hashed it out than not.
Do you ever...
And are you really compelled to do it, or can you ever let it go? Do you do it all the time?
No, not when it's... Yeah. All the time, yeah, all the time.
Do you ever... And this is what I'm feeling at the minute, which is why I'm sort of losing interest in this sort of thing. Do you ever feel like it's really pointless? Like, the people I tend to find myself arguing with a lot, I'm never going to change their mind.
It gets... People, at least in the atheist riffs, are very, very predictable. Like, you knew as soon as whatever scandal hits, you know, FTB is going to take this side and Slime Pit's going to take this side, and they'll be like, oh no, women are innocent victims, and over here they'll say, no, men are being falsely accused, or what, you know, you always know in advance what's going to happen. So. Mm-hmm.
I had an interesting conversation. This was actually Skepticism First that said this to me the other day, that one of the biggest lies is that atheists are more open-minded and more amenable to criticism than theists, because I see it a lot with atheists. They hate being called out as much as anybody else does, you know, really, despite being free-thinking in other ways. It doesn't mean that people like being criticized, because obviously most people don't. But I tweeted the other night, I don't know where it came from, it just sort of struck me, and I said, you know, dear atheists, if they did, it's all very well to say that, if they did prove God, you would change your mind because you would always accept the evidence rather than your feelings, but wouldn't you on a personal level be totally gutted nonetheless? And I got a lot of responses to it, but people could not divorce the idea of God being proved. They couldn't divorce the idea of, like, they would still say that he was a total bastard, though, and they'd still say, no, it wouldn't make any difference to me because he'd still be a misogynist and I'd still hate him and I'd still fight him. And I was trying to say to people, but that isn't the point. That wasn't what the question was. It's not what you think about God or what the nature of God would turn out to be or which God would turn out to have been proved. All of that is kind of irrelevant. The point is that wouldn't you just find that because your personal bias for there not to be a God had been disproved, wouldn't you just find it a really bitter pill to swallow in the face of overwhelming evidence? It wouldn't feel good to have to change your mind about it. But I couldn't get anybody to focus in just specifically on that because people didn't like it. They were very uncomfortable.
Was that like 10 minutes of podcast just to prove that you really did have a point?
No, I didn't have I do have a point. The point was related to when you try to call people out on stuff that they don't want to hear.
No, I just mean on Twitter when I said basically what you were talking about. Like, well, we could address the fact, if he would turned out to be real, we could address the fact of how much an asshole he is. And you said, well, that wasn't really my point, was it?
Right. And it wasn't really my point.
But if God, if it turns out there's some sort of gods, like, that would be really interesting. It would open up a whole new field of inquiry. I mean, theology would become interesting again. So that's an upside.
Okay, so you always are just looking for how to, like, have an open mind about it.
Well,
you're trying to, like, never get pissed off personally, but always just to see it as an intellectual challenge.
I think that's why I annoy people. I don't get pissed off very easily. I just, you know, I'm just here for the. For the lulls, really, or the, you know, not the lulls, but to have the debate. I just want to have the debate.
I don't think God being proved would affect me too much unless it turned out that God really did want you to adhere to whichever holy book he's come from. Like, if it turned out that you were supposed to observe mass or whatever, and failure to do these things would result in you going to hell for eternity, that would be the only way that God being proved would really change my life. Because if it's just like, God's real, but you've got to be a good person, then I try to be that anyway, so, yeah.
Okay, but there's two things there, because one is the idea that God would be proved is a completely different question than if the Bible would be proved. I'm always assuming that all organized religion is made up by men either way.
I was assuming Bible because she said if God would be proved rather than if a God was proved.
Rather than if religion would be proved.
Yeah, but when you say to somebody, you know, imagine if God were real, they're probably going to go back on whatever God they were taught when they were young. They're going to think of God in terms of the Bible if they're, you know, brought up with the Bible.
But that's interesting because that's my exact point. Because I was never brought up with any gods and was brought up quite a strong atheist, that is what I mean. My deeply cherished, very beloved belief is that there is no God in the creator sense. And I would find it really difficult to abandon that idea in the face of evidence. I'm just saying I would find it difficult.
I don't think I would because it's not so much a belief. Like I said, the whole religion thing to me is, yeah. Unless it affects day-to-day life or there is some real risk of an eternity in something or other. Yeah. It's really not an important factor in day-to-day life.
Right. Well, you know, some of us are more wishy-washy. We can't all have the courage of our convictions, John. It's fine. We still love
it. It's not courage of convictions. It's outright militant apathy.
that's what it is. It's more evangelical apathy.
Yeah, that's it.
Sort of door-to-door apathy, I guess.
It's some kind of oxymoron.
I'm more of a militant atheist. I just don't talk about it very much on Twitter, actually. I'm much more of a militant atheist than people probably think I am, because I actually rarely discuss it, because I use Twitter to make love, not war. That's my policy.
Let's go back to the popularity contest. Zoe's winning the popularity contest because of this love. Nude pics.
Yeah, exactly. And I am. How many followers have you got again, John?
And I said the other day, it keeps teetering over 500 and then dipping back down to like 496. Mm-hmm. It's like Twitter's just teasing me.
those are all of Snake's sock accounts quitting you and then coming back.
Some of them quitting and then some new ones being created and he forgets that he's supposed to be unfollowing. Right. So we've got on it, Zoe really wanted to know.
Probably accounts for a lot of mine.
Yeah, at least 238. So Zoe wanted to know if you were willing to talk about it, Damien. Why are you protected? Mm-hmm. Or is this a...
I'm not right at the moment.
Are you not?
I'm unprotected right now as we
like
speak.
Like 58 tweets that I want to retweet.
Oh, shit.
No. Me too, I also want to retweet you.
I'm going to go protect it right now if you start doing that.
But will you tell the story? What was it that happened? Is this to do with the T-shirts in front of the sign on the wall? Or what,
it was protected
what was
before
it about?
That. Wouldn't it?
Okay. No, basically, do you guys remember when Stephanie Zvon wrote that really lengthy deep dive into everything Sarah Mayhew ever said on Twitter that was stupid?
No, but I'm aware of both.
I remember
of them,
it happening, but
Sarah
I never read it.
Yeah, I haven't read it, but I know what you mean, yeah.
And so basically, I forget exactly how or when this started. Zvon was going through a list of people that Tim Farley had mentioned a list of people sort of indirectly, very indirectly. And Zvon started just going through the list and digging through their timelines as far back as she possibly could and coming up with every dumb thing that they ever said. And then she would post it on her blog, which gets a fair bit of readership. She would post it out of context, like, look, they said this stupid thing, this stupid thing, this stupid thing. And of course, she wouldn't say, like, well, leading up to that, there was this conversation. So, you know, she didn't provide too much context to it. And it really made these people look bad. It was like the most vengeful sort of storify you can imagine. Like you pick one person and you go through their whole timeline and find the dumbest things they've ever said. And then you broadcast it to 1,000 readers and say, look at this idiot. Look at all these dumb things that she said. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, if that's, you know, if that's going to be an ongoing thing where people deep dive someone's timeline and just find the worst things I've ever said, and then point 1,000 free thought blogs trolls in your direction and say, go hate on that person. Mm-hmm. At that point, I thought, fuck it, I'm just going to lock my account. But that's not why the account stayed locked. That's why I locked it the first time.
Right.
And then I realized that with the account locked, I could be far more honest and open about what I thought. I could just say what I'm thinking and be like, what, only 800 people are going to see this. I don't have to worry about, you know, getting back to my mom or whoever. So once you lock your account and you start being more honest with less restrained with what you're going to type out, then it tends to become a self-fulfilling process at that point. Mm-hmm. You lock your account and then you type the kind of things you would type if your account was locked, which makes you want to keep it locked, basically.
Right, that's really interesting.
But unlike most of the conversations we have about Twitter, this shows a fundamental understanding of the way it works rather than a misunderstanding or lack of understanding.
Of course, it's not something you can do when you're just starting out, because when you're just starting out, you need to find people to talk to on Twitter, and you can't do that with a locked account.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always wonder how that works. Yeah. How do you even get followers?
Well, that's the thing. I already had like 500, 600 people I interacted with by the time I locked my account.
And so when somebody requests to follow you, how do you decide whether or not you're going to let them?
I look and see if they're a brand new account, like an egg or something, they've got nothing going on in their timeline, I don't add them.
No.
Other than that, I usually just look at what they're up to in their timeline, and if they seem that they're interesting, then I add them.
Okay.
And then I follow back.
This is actually a really good blending topic to what you've got down as a main topic, which is Storify harassment, which really goes hand in hand with privacy on Twitter.
Exactly. But you did see, I did put some thought into this, you know.
Oh, right, okay, sorry. I didn't realize it was intentional.
No, okay, I'm joking. It did tie in very neatly, more than I could predict.
It does, because, for one thing, whenever I do have a series of conversations that I want to have published publicly, I will go Storify it. So I Storify my own tweets to get them out into the public view sometimes, and my interactions with other people, because, like, oh, this is a really interesting conversation. I don't want it to stay... I don't want it to be like my tweets are the ones that are hidden from this conversation, so I'll Storify the whole thing and be like, okay, now it's out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. So when you've got the locked account, you're using Storify as a kind of backup public tool in a way. How does Storify work? Can people, because I read a lot of them, but it's only when you guys tweet them I always
open Storify the link. Grabs the tweet information and stores it locally. So it's not like if I send you a link to a tweet and you click on that link and go to that tweet and that person has you blocked or that person's privated, you can't see that tweet. If that person puts their tweet on Storify and you go to that Storify, it's not getting the tweet from Twitter, it's got the tweet on its local server, so anyone can see it. So once it's in Storify, and it's one of the things they complain about, because say Damien tweeted something now, and I Storified his tweet, and then he privated account, that tweet's still Storified, even though he's privated his account. And it's one of the things they complain about when people Storify, is that they'll lose control of their content.
Yeah, and also they can't delete it then, of course.
No.
Right.
Or permanently.
But what people should understand about internet in general is that once you've made something public, it's public.
Right. Yeah, well, we're going to get into what we all think about that in a minute. What I more meant was, is Storify something, is it a website that people just go and look at and browse, or do people mainly only ever see your Storifys if you tweet a link to it and they click on that?
I'm sure some people look at the website. That was what I meant.
If you've got a login to it, does it suggest things you might want to read?
I think you can just go to Storify and search, you know, like it was a news site. I've never done it myself, but I'm pretty sure you can just browse it like it was Huffington Post or something.
What I was sort of wondering about is when these people object to being Storified and their tweets are then in a Storify that's there for anybody to look at, who actually is looking at it, I suppose is what I meant. Like, what kind of exposure additional to Twitter do you expect to get from a Storify?
That's the argument, really, isn't it? It's that when someone like EG Storifies people, there's a certain type of audience that's going to see that Storify, and that's what they're complaining about, is that they don't want their tweets to be seen by a bunch of white dude bros, effectively.
Yeah. What they usually complain about, though, is that Storify notifies you when you've been Storified.
Right, and the EG thing you mentioned, elevator gate, and the email notification was a big part of that, wasn't it? So shall we just briefly sum up the elevator gate thing? I know it's a long time ago, but maybe we should just say a few words about what that was, because you can't really talk about Storify without
it. A long time ago in internet years.
I know, it still gets referred to, though. I wouldn't say it's quite dead, although it's obviously not.
Well, yeah, although it's not even that relevant to EG, the person, because he doesn't talk about that shit anymore, and he hasn't for a long time.
Mm-hmm. No, that's absolutely right. Notifications. I've never had an email. Well, I said that I'd never been Storified, and you were like, yeah, you have. But one of the reasons I thought I never had was because I've obviously never had an email about it.
Oh,
but
because you have a Storified account.
Exactly. So these people that were getting harassed, quote unquote, by email notifications, that is because they actually subscribe to the service themselves.
And they check the box. Check the box that says send me notifications.
Right.
If they uncheck that box, then they don't get notifications.
So I'm a little bit interested in how they thought that Storify was a harassment tool, and they went crazy on there. Was he the CEO, the Adam guy? Certainly he was in charge of it anyway. But they were actually using this service. If they thought that it was a harassment tool, what the fuck were they using it for in the first place then?
Like, none of it ever bothered. To claim it's a harassment tool.
like, what have you got? Why have you got a Twitter login is obviously the first question, but why have you got a Storify login and you're getting notifications from them in the first place then anyway?
Possibly
if you think
because,
all it is for stalking.
Possibly because people like Svan use Storify and they want to be notified if someone likes Svan. I mean, that's the only legitimate argument you can make about notify right. harassments is that you can't, at the time, I'm not sure what it's like now, you couldn't say, I don't want to get notified if this person storifies me. You could either be notified if you get storified or not notified. So you, right. so they couldn't uncheck EG storifies while keeping whoever they're interested mm-hmm. in. That's about the only legitimate argument of, or complaint that they had at the time, which they didn't actually make.
And
they just said it's harassment.
What I'm saying is, I want to be notified if somebody has storified me in a flattering way, somebody who I think likes me and has done it out of admiration. But if somebody has storified me trying to make me look like a dick, then I don't want to be notified of that. I mean, that's what you're saying, isn't it?
Yeah, well, more or less, yeah.
I think it would be great if Storify added the following feature. In every email that they send you about you've been storified, have a little link that says, I no longer want to receive notifications from the Storify user.
Yeah.
Right.
It's really super easy. Hey, Storify, are you hearing me? Please add the feature.
Let's dogpile them.
I'll tweet them later. Their support account has interacted with me before, so I know that they will hear your suggestions. And that would be an awesome feature for them to have, because then whenever like Sarah Jones accuses me of harassing her by storifying her tweets, I can say just click the link that says no more notifications from Damien and you're done. And that'd be awesome.
But is she done, though? Because they will just move the goalposts. The point is that she will still know that you're storifying her. How much better does she feel about that when she's no longer being notified? Like, I'm not sure how I would feel about that if I was considering that very harassing. Am I really only bothered about the emails, or am I bothered about the fact that somebody is still out there looking at my tweets and grabbing them into the Storify? Like, I don't really say it would make you feel less harassed, because surely the harassment doesn't come from, although I know they claimed it did, but it doesn't come from an automatically generated email, because that's just like a robot thing. Surely the harassment comes from the idea that you don't want these people looking at your timeline. You're concerned that they're looking at what you're saying. Surely, if there's any genuine harassment, that's what it is.
Yeah, I can't claim to get in the mind of these people. I can't imagine what it's like to feel harassed by somebody reading your timeline.
Of public information that you've put out there publicly.
Right, and I locked down my timeline because I didn't want people reading it like Stephanie Svan, so I locked it. And it's, you know, if that's how you want to do it, then go lock your timeline. It's not hard.
Well, but you don't consider that being silenced, but they won't ever do that, will they? They're totally reluctant to go private. They don't consider that an option because they seem to think that they've lost somehow if they've done that.
I got into a bit of a tussle with Femi Theist over this, effectively, and her point was that, like, it was specifically about Twitter privacy, not Storify, although she did point out that I'm one of those people that likes to Storify and harass, which point I was like, okay, I'm going to continue this argument now, because I'm not playing the Storify's harassment card. But basically,
you had sexually harassed her for several days before this.
That's different, though. She enjoyed that. And so she was basically saying that that Twitter should increase privacy to let you block a person and prevent that person from seeing your timeline. Basically force them to log out if they wanted to look at your timeline. Just add this extra step of this extra part mm-hmm. of work on the part of the harasser, as she puts it.
Isn't that how it used to work?
Well, that was what she said.
Well,
I'd never. Yeah, she said that, I couldn't find any reference to it, and I don't remember it ever working that way. And I've been on Twitter since.
It was a 3-day argument about whether that had ever been true.
I remember it working that way, because when I was on the Blockbot, I used to have to log out to see like all sorts of people.
All right. Okay. Well, I never. I don't remember.
I would just.
Maybe I just wasn't blocked at the right time.
Incognito window. I'd open an incognito window if I wanted to read PC Myers or Rebecca Watson, because they had me blocked.
But that was Femi Theist wanted it to go back to that then, if that's how it worked before. And she was saying that arguing against it is arguing for less privacy. But my point is, Twitter doesn't have privacy. You've got public, or you've got a whitelist. That's the only two ways it can work. I mean, you could have a blacklist, which is your block, but you can't stop them from seeing everything, because they can just log out, or they can just look at your timeline as it is now. They can just look at your timeline, or as it worked apparently before, they could just log out. But so that's why a blacklist doesn't work, because you can't have a blacklist without and be public. You can have a whitelist where you're not public and you approve certain people, but you can't exclude people without closing the system, and that would go against everything that Twitter is.
They could very easily add features. I'm not sure if they'd want to, but you know, right now everything's default public, like viewable to the world, and the only other setting is viewable only to your followers, right? Mm-hmm. But they could add other settings. You could, for example, you could say make this tweet viewable to this list of users and have it point over to a list of users.
I do like that. I think you mentioned that on Twitter, didn't you? That idea, privateable tweets or whatever it was. I did like that idea.
Well, I would love the ability to change certain of my tweets to public. You know, I would like to keep my timeline private by default, and then be able to go to one tweet and be like, I love this tweet, I want to share this with the world, and just change that one to public. That'd be an awesome feature. Twitter, are you hearing this? Twitter.
I think we'll tweet this podcast to both Storify and Twitter when we're done.
Yeah, I expect they'll get right on that.
Yeah.
Sit down with a coffee.
I mean, I don't think that would be too much to ask, because they already have a public mode and a private mode, and it would be just awesome to toggle that on an individual tweet basis.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting idea, because this might just be the nature of the people that we follow and talk about, but actually, you don't ever hear anybody talking about how amazing it is with the idea of a global platform where what you say can reach anybody all around the world. Like, obviously, it's a massively popular thing to use because people think that that's an incredible tool, but mostly what we hear about is people that are using it bitching about it.
Mostly what we hear about.
Mostly what we hear about is people bitching all day.
Yeah, but I don't think we represent a large proportion of the Twitter's users.
Or the SJWs.
The problem with a global public platform, though, is that if somebody says something stupid, like, do you remember that lady that got on the flight right after she tweeted something racist?
Yeah.
No,
Somebody says something stupid, there's this huge public backlash where it starts out with a few indignant people and they get all their followers to pile on, and then by the time this person gets off the plane, there's like 10,000 people hating on her, like just filling up her timeline with hate.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea what the solution to that problem is, because it's a brand new problem.
Well, the solution to that particular problem would be not to say something racist.
I knew you were going to say that.
Okay, all right, point taken, but you've tweeted things that could get 10,000 social justice warriors angry at you. It's not hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, social justice warriors, no. Yeah, the woman who tweeted something racist, it sounded like she attracted attention from more than just SJWs.
Well, yeah, but they're the ones that you know, led the charge. Yeah. Look at this terrible person. Let's all condemn her.
Yeah. Ironically, what they complained about with EG.
Right. Right. Which is, hey, look at this silly conversation.
Yeah.
But I mean, the ability to have a global pylon where, you know, thousands or tens of thousands of people see something and they go, wow, that was really stupid. Like, only politicians are built to deal with that level of abuse.
Yeah.
And media.
I don't think we need to be looking.
People don't know how to do that.
I don't think we need to be looking for a solution to the problem. I think it's just a matter of people understanding what they're using. Like,
yes.
I liken Twitter to standing on a street corner and shouting. Obviously, it's not a perfect analogy if you imagine your shouting can be heard all around the world, but like standing on a street corner and shouting and complaining about the wrong kind of people seeing your tweet is like complaining that somebody like 10 people back who you don't want to hear you shouting on the street can hear you. That's effectively what Twitter is. It's you standing on a street corner and shouting. It's not having a private message with one other person and then complaining because somebody else is butting in.
Or putting it on Facebook when you know that everybody you're friends with on Facebook is also racist, so they'll think it's cool.
Right, it's not like that. But, okay, to take a specific example, last time you guys talked about the PTSD tweets from Melody Hensley.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I think that we need to, as a humanist, I don't know if you guys are humanists, but I'm a humanist, so I value compassion and empathy. At some point, when you see that 1,000 people have already piled on to abuse her on Twitter, at that point you say, well, I guess I'll back off because... Yeah. She's already gotten enough negative feedback. Maybe in this age of like massive reactions to like a series of tweets, we need to be self-aware enough to say, wait, is there already a huge backlash? Maybe I shouldn't pile on. Maybe we need an ethos of not piling on.
I completely agree with that. That was what I was about to say about this thing with 10,000 people calling her out for being a racist. Why do you, like, it's not why do you care about racism, but it's why do you care so much that somebody you've never met said one thing in 140 characters that might have sounded racist? That's not really, you're not, like, fighting for the rights of people of different races around the whole entire world. You are just literally having the personal need to be an asshole back to somebody really personally. And I don't quite understand that. I don't quite understand caring about that one tweet that badly. And yeah, absolutely. When you see that thousands of other people have already done it, what do you even think you're achieving by adding to it?
Exactly. And it's that pile-on mentality. I see it most often in the social justice culture. You know, if we pile on them, then they will feel really bad about themselves and they will change, or they'll just go away. Either way, the SJWs are happy about it. Yeah. You know, either you've converted them or you've made them fuck off. It's win-win. But I don't think piling on is really a virtuous activity. I don't think it's actually making people better.
I agree with you there.
And it's an unending pile-on because they won't accept any apology. It doesn't matter how many times you apologize to the pile-on, they demand another apology or a better apology or an apology on 12 different mediums.
Yeah, that's also true. But the thing that was kind of different with the Melody Hensley thing as well was that it wasn't so much like permanently offended SJW people that were piling on her. It was mostly military vets and military people. So she attracted this pile-on from a very specific group of people that probably normally wouldn't be doing that at all. They were probably not people that were normally using their Twitter to go about being offended at everything and anything. But they felt compelled to jump into this because she had I would definitely argue that she did a kind of like come at me thing with that. We were talking about what she was hoping to achieve.
I did. I mean, I very rarely tweet these people anyway, unless they tweet me first. But like, I made a point to not tweet Melody Hensley or any of that lot about that because as soon as it came out and as soon as it popped up in like a British newspaper, I thought, she's going to get enough stick from people who have no interest in social justice, people who have no idea about the debate over whether man and woman should include trans women and trans men or whatever, people who have absolutely no idea that there are still states in America where it's illegal to be gay or whatever. She's going to attract attention from all quarters and she's going to get stick for it. So it's like there's really no point in this little group of people that argues with social justice warriors also giving a stick. She's going to get plenty of stick. She's going to see what the real world thinks about these opinions. So there was just no point. I voiced opinions about it, but nothing to them, if you get what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. Which I think is what Damien was saying as well about the time 1,000 other people have already done it. You can still have your opinion and you may still be condemning it, but what are you hoping to achieve by adding
The problem with Twitter, with the pylon mentality with Twitter, is that I can voice my opinion on Twitter. I've only got 496 followers or whatever it is. 10 of those followers might decide to go tweet at Melody Hensley after seeing my tweet about Melody Hensley, and I can't stop them because it's a public tweet.
Yeah, that's true. Obviously, anything that you're putting out there, you never know what somebody else is going to then go and do with it.
Sometimes you do know.
I mean, it depends on what kind of followers you have. You can be pretty confident that certain sorts of stupidity are going to be met with a backlash.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that was what we were saying, because you, Damien, ended up feeling a bit sorry for her, or maybe always felt a bit sorry for her. Well, that was kind of my question to you, was, you know, like, what the hell else did she expect to happen? She's not new, is she? She must have known. It's not about whether or not it's right or wrong that people would say things like that to her. It's just about the fact that it must have been predictable to her that they would.
I don't think that's true either. I mean, enough time. Well, she's kind of in a social justice bubble with all of her SJ friends, and they're very sensitive about victims.
We have discussed that.
It's not like she hangs out with veterans. Does she? Do you think she has friends that are vets?
No. I more meant about like having people coming at her, like calling her a cunt and stuff on Twitter. She must have.
And I think I know which tweet you're talking about. I remember seeing Damien tweet about that, and I agree. I do feel sorry about all these people, but I just generally feel sorry for it because I don't think she's lying about the PTSD. I think she just has the mentality where this is the kind of thing that's enough to push her over the edge, and I feel sorry for it. It's like that Rebecca Watson thing we talked about, where she brought up how shitty might trigger somebody who's had a newly installed colostomy bag. Like, it's like, I do feel sorry for these people, and it's condescending, but if all it takes is nasty words on Twitter to send you over the trauma edge, then yeah, you've got my sympathy. I don't think you should be a spokesperson for any group.
Yeah, there's that aspect of it as well.
No, I agree that if you're that sensitive, then probably being a public spokesperson is not a good role for you. Mm-hmm. So, like, Melody Hensley is not in a good position to be a public spokesperson for CFI. Sarah Jones is certainly not in a good position to be a public spokesperson for Americans United, because they say things that bring out these troll armies, and then they're like, oh my God, look at me, I'm being harassed. Well, yeah, you probably should have seen that coming, and that's very unfortunate. But that said, I mean, that doesn't make it okay to be part of the troll army.
Right.
Yes, it's predictable, but that doesn't make it ethical.
Nope, yep, that's
absolutely. That was, totally agree with you there.
There's no redeeming factor about somebody who tweets at someone for no good reason to just say you're a cunt and I hope you die.
or even if they think they do have a good reason, that's not the way to make your point.
Yeah, like if she'd been overwhelmed with legitimate criticism, you know, then
I'd love to see that actually happen.
I've never seen
but
that.
She was as well. She was overwhelmed with legitimate criticism.
I want to see that happen one day. I want to see somebody overwhelmed by legitimate criticism. I suffered PTSD from legitimate criticism.
These people keep tweeting at me to read scientific articles. It's driving me crazy. I don't even have access to some of these journals.
Yeah, well, that could be a good alternative narrative.
There must be somebody in like homeopathy who's suffered something along those lines.
And that, I mean, you know, I get behind that. I don't mind people having to deal with a shitload of thoughtful rebuttals. You know, it might just take a long time to get through, but you shouldn't be emotionally overwhelmed by it. But the default response that we see so often in the Rift Wars on both sides is just abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I don't know why people think that helps. I don't see, I mean, joking I get, making fun of people, you know, a lighthearted way I get, but the just straight up abuse, how does that make anything better?
I think
I don't think it does make anything better. But
no, it doesn't make anything better, but I think I understand the mindset, because I think I've reached a similar point, only my response to it is to go near and to lose interest. But I think for a lot of people, it's like, and what I mean is they get in with these argument after argument after argument, and it's always the same thing, and nobody ever changes their mind. And after a while, you start to think, this is pointless, why am I even bothering? So for you people like Ulon or your Svans or whatever, they assume fuckwit immediately. If somebody who disagrees with them, they've got this long history of arguing with people. They never change anyone's mind. The people always have the same opinions. They just assume that you're an idiot, you're racist, misogynist, whatever, and then they treat you as such. I've got this. I think I'm mm-hmm. at the same point. It's just that my response is to just I can't be arsed and go do something else. Whereas their response is to continue the good fight, but just assume that they're fighting trolls.
But you're just what you're doing is not the same, because you're writing them off and just saying, okay, you for whatever reason no longer interest me to engage with. But I see people calling you a misogynist the whole entire time, and it's crazy to me because I know that you're not. But they're based on one tweet.
I know I am.
I could go and tell John. Not everything's a joke.
But that's also
one of these days I'm going to internalize my misogyny.
To say that you're a racist or you're a misogynist is, I mean, that's their form of abuse. Like, one side says you're a cunt and the other side says you're a misogynist. And either way, they're trying to put a nasty label on you. I think actually I'd much rather be called a cunt than a misogynist, to be honest, because a cunt's just like a kind of a vulgar word, but a misogynist is someone who hates women. I'd much rather have to deal with being called vulgar words.
That being said, they've diluted things like misogyny down to the point where it's not really that nasty anymore.
Well, but that's what I was going to say. It's like with a five-year-old, like when they say to you, you're a poo. And of course, it's slightly amusing because it's not really a swear word and it sounds a bit cute. But their intention is to say the worst word that they know to you. They're trying to throw like the grossest, most horrible thing they can think of at you. And the point then is that that's the intent. It's the same thing as when a grown-up is doing it with a word that is, of course, worse. But these things are actually, they're only what the market will tolerate, aren't they? Like, to my son, poo is the worst word he knows. That is so untrue. Oh, my God. Can't even get through that. We've had this discussion before, John. My five-year-old knows all words, but he doesn't use them against me that often. I feel like I wish I hadn't made that point now, because I just said that was the worst word he knows, and I realized how totally not true that was. So let's not talk about how good of a mother I am. Let's get back to...
My son's four. Is he going to start calling me a poo? Because I don't think I could take that.
You are the soppiest parent I have ever met in my whole entire life. You are. Seriously. But this is what I was going to ask you, just to bring it slightly back to Storify. I mean, this is all relevant in terms of what you tweet and what you can expect people to answer to it. But if we're just looking at Storify as a kind of parallel tool to Twitter, as you two both sort of said it was, when you're making a Storify, do you cherry pick what you want to put into it? Are they easy to manipulate? Or does it... I have no idea how it works.
Okay.
Can you choose how you represent what's being said?
This is a really important point. Like for ElevatorGate... or Fartin Robbins, or however, whatever other Storify accounts he has, formerly Granite Bench. All he does is he just looks at a conversation on Twitter on using Tweetbot. He just looks at a whole conversation and be like, "Wow, that's messed up." And then he hits this button that's tweet this conversation, and he's done. Mm-hmm. That's all he does. So people talk about like, yeah, well, and then Tweetbot automatically takes all those tweets and sends them to Storify as a collection. So people think that he's like obsessively Storifying all these people. Really, he's just reading Twitter for lulz, and then whenever he finds something that makes him laugh, he hits one button, and the whole thing goes to Storify. Mm-hmm. So that's how he does it, and that's how I do most of my stories when I start them. Now, you can go back into browser, like a full browser, and edit the stories and add pictures and add in stuff that's not tweets. But the reason that EG is so high volume is that he's just hitting – he's just one button publishing. Just click, it all goes there.
Mm-hmm. And that brought us back to the thing, I think it was Luffysaurus that was saying, you can't actually stalk over 1,000 people because it means having an obsessive and focused interest in the person. And that kind of – one of the worst people in that whole thing with ElevatorGate was the Anna Mordell woman, wasn't she, who John did a really good Storify about.
Yeah, I was going to say, you linked to a Storify by somebody who was clearly very angry and unhinged. Yes. I don't know who this person is, but they should seek help.
He's a good friend of mine,
yeah. This
person. And she was saying – she was berating the Storify guy for having alerted attention to a known, having brought her to the attention of a known stalker. And this is where I start to think, like, it's like you, a known stalker, what is that supposed to mean? Just because he's stalking, even if somebody was stalking somebody else, if my best friend was being stalked, am I sitting there going, oh, I hope he doesn't ever see me, because if he gets one look at me, then he'll definitely be stalking me twice as hard as you. You assume that the stalker has an obsessive interest in the person that they're stalking, so everybody else is safe.
Like, that one tweet where he included both EG's name and her name in the same tweet must have been a godsend to her, because she would have run out of steam, like, you know, within two or three tweets had he not done that. That basically fueled her Twitter for the next 2 weeks until she ultimately privated it soon after.
Did she? She's not private now. It was
because basically she led this little mini campaign to prevent the harassment that she wasn't receiving until she started this little campaign. Like, I looked before I did that Storify you linked. I looked for a single reference of her in EG Storifies. I couldn't find one. Obviously, there's a lot of Storifies, so I didn't check it all, which is why I said rarely, if at all. But I couldn't find any references of her in EG Storifies until she started on this, until she started complaining that Xdam had, you know, brought her to the attention of a known stalker and harasser.
Yeah, I have no idea why. Well, I don't know how people justify calling him that. He's obviously has too much spare time and he reads Twitter a lot, but that's true of a lot of people. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people who read Twitter a lot, and the difference is that he hits the Storify button in Tweetbot. That's the only difference. Mm-hmm. And we've seen his interests shift over time. At first, he was really into the whole atheist riffs, and then he's like, well, I need a stronger form of crazy feminism. So he got into radical feminism and started following them.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's into the, you know, the whole trans misogyny crowd or the anti-trans misogyny crowd. And he finds that fascinating.
But really,
he's just looking at the subcultures and he's doing ethnography, basically.
Have you heard our theory of the ever shrinking bubble of social justice? So you've got your large a group of people and they have reasonable sort of standards, like you shouldn't be racist, you shouldn't like discriminate against someone because of their skin color, you shouldn't treat a woman as inferior because she's a woman, and then all the people that disagree get sort of shunned, but then the group that's left start refining that until you get down to the point where it's like a male penis shouldn't count for anything. If their woman says she's a woman, then she's a woman and all that stuff. And it just keeps shrinking and shrinking. But then you get what happens in that smaller...
Where skeptic are no longer allies.
Yeah.
You can only exclude so many people by saying, hey guys, you think racism is bad? I mean, that's going to exclude just a few crazy Klansman types.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You really want to show how pure you are. You've got to get to the abstruse doctrines, like a woman is whoever identifies as a woman. And that takes a certain amount of like rejiggering of what we think English means usually.
And the worst one that I ever saw was that if a trans woman still has a penis, a lesbian should be prepared to have penetrative sex, because you should understand as a lesbian that it is not the same thing as having a man's penis inside you.
Who
did write that?
Would it be a trans woman by any chance who had a penis?
Yeah.
Avery?
It was a Tumblr blog, actually. But
Tumblr?
What I can't remember is who linked it.
But the point I was making, though, is like, so Melody is an example of what happens when somebody ventures out of that bubble and sees the real world, how the real world reacts to the opinions they've formed in the bubble. What Damien just said then about EG looking for stranger and stranger people kind of makes it, like, puts his image in mind of him tunnelling into the bubble, and he's just tunnelling deeper and deeper inside and coming back out with all these storyfies.
Convinced there's not going to be any oxygen.
It's like, look what I found deep in the bubble. And they're like, hey, stop harassing us.
Yeah. But that is actually quite a useful way of thinking about it. But so, Damien, you said a bit about why you use Storify is partly because your account's protected. So it's a way of making some of your stuff accessible. But John, as well, you use it a lot. Aside from the point about your protected account and Storify, why do you guys use it then? Like, what's the... Because, John, you always add comments. I love yours. You're always making a point where you're putting your personal opinion into it.
Yeah. Yeah, I very rarely Storify unless I've got something to say about it. Like, EG and, to some extent, Damien's approach seems to be, this happened, I think it's of interest, here it is, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Whereas I'm more of a commentary sort of thing. I won't put it up there unless I've got a comment to make about it, which kind of... It suits it, not so much with EG, but with Damien, as we've talked about, is very unbiased. Like, he'll call out stupidity regardless of what side of the fence it's on. I've got my biases, so when I make a Storify, they tend to be in line with my biases, and my comments will sort of go with that, if you get what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so yours tend to illustrate a point.
Yeah.
And it tends to be that you would either definitely agree with...
Well, I mean, Damien's and EG's illustrate a point, but the point that you take away can be entirely different from person to person, whereas mine, you kind of led to the point because I'm giving you the point, if you get what I mean. Mm-hmm. Mine are not as inducive to three thought, is another way of looking at it. Okay, so we lost Damien. I don't know why I went all posh when I said his name then. But yeah, we've lost Damien Reinhardt, and... it doesn't look like we're going to get him back. So we're going to finish off the podcast. There's not really much. We've covered pretty much all of the story, I think. So he's served his purpose. He will be missed.
He will be missed. That was a shame that we lost him.
Yeah, it was, yes. He tried valiantly to get his system back operational. Much was made of his efforts. He will be sung about in the annals. I don't know where I'm going with this, so we'll just go on to the idiot tweet of the week. Stupid tweet of the week.
He did fight, didn't he? So the sad thing was that he's supposed to judge who's the winner, and now, of course, we've lost him, so we'll just have to get him to do that afterwards.
Yep. So the winner will not be, unless we can get, we'll figure something out, but the winner will not be decided in this podcast because our judge is not with us at present. So your tweet's first in the doc. Do you want to go first?
Okay, well, so I did what I quite often do, which was find one that was relevant, and I found this in your Storify. However, the only reason that I found your Storify was because I was looking at Anna Mordal's timeline. I was going to see if she'd said something recently that I would want to nominate, but in actual fact, I went back to the dark days of the elevator gate thing, and I chose one that was actually an old tweet, but of course it's relevant to that. So this is Anna Mordal, who we've already discussed slightly, and it says... That Storify at xdamman, what's his name? Adaman, is sharing an endorsing on Twitter, says that the known stalker is just compiling silly things, and the worst thing of all, she's hashtagged it rape culture. Rape culture in your Storify. You called her a hobgoblin for doing that, which I thought was nicely done and very deserved. I mean, seriously.
I got very angry with that woman.
But I mean, I do get very angry with that as well. Like, we've talked before about rape culture and the stupid ways that it's used, but this may be the worst example ever. She wasn't even if Elevator Gate was stalking people, he wasn't stalking her. And even if he had been stalking her, if it's stalking at all, by storifying her, which he wasn't doing, but even if he had been doing, how on earth does it have anything to do with rape? Or culture, either?
Who knows?
Who knows? That's wrong on so many levels.
It's just the whole thing. I mean, obviously, you've put it in the doc, so self-promotion aside, I will put a link to my Storify in the show notes. But it's, yeah, you can see from this, I actually put at the top of it, it's probably my angriest Storify. I just couldn't believe that this woman needs shame. Like, she needs some shame in her life. She needs something in her brain that makes her just stop and think, am I going to look like a total fucking tool before I open my mouth or type my words on my keyboard?
Yeah.
Because it was unreal, the sort of liberties she took with the use of the English language.
It was blatant and shameless. It was, and I would say if anybody isn't really familiar with this, with the whole Elevator Gate thing, and they're listening to the podcast, maybe go and read that Storify before you listen to it. I'm saying that right at the end. There's no point in that, is there? I should have said that at the beginning.
True. Yeah.
You could help me by editing that, but you're not going to, are you?
No. That's far too much effort.
Read your tweet.
So, my tweet.
Yeah, and you're enjoying me being silly.
To be honest, I can't remember where I found this. Wait, have we got Damien back?
Can you hear us?
Have we got Damien back in a manner that works? We're recording, so.
Ooh, an evil laugh.
We can hear you, yes.
Holy shit.
Do you want to repeat your tweet, Zoe, seeing as Damien's supposed to be judging?
Is he back? Are we sure?
No. I'm back, bitches.
Back, bitches. Okay, we've moved on to the stupid tweets then, which you have to judge.
Right on.
Shall I read mine again?
Yep. Repeat yourself. I know you like doing that.
What a cheek. No more than you do. What a cheek.
You just repeated yourself then.
Oh, don't make me laugh. I can't talk again. We're not going to get this wrapped up. Right, Anna Mordal. She says, that Storify that acts like Dam Allen, whatever his name is sharing and endorsing on Twitter, says that the known stalker is just compiling silly things, # rape culture.
Wait, what? Rape culture?
Rape exactly. Culture. She wasn't being storified by Elevatorgate, but had she been, it would have been rape culture.
I mean, Twitter is fun, but I mean, I don't see where the non-consent part comes in here.
Not to mention that the people that he was being complained about storifying was them. So, were they being rape culture-y?
Is Twitter like a metaphor for intercourse in this?
Yeah, because who the fuck got raped? There was nothing sexual about any of it.
Or endorsing rape, or in any way related to rape.
Or in any way to rape culture. She really doesn't know what stalking means.
Okay, so what are the other ones?
Yeah, go John.
My choice was, I don't know where I found it. I don't even recognise the Twitter handle. It's @sassytbh. It's got the unflattering Beyonce meme pic as its avia. I don't know whether he, her, whatever. And it's, quote, "You shouldn't be walking alone at this time of night." And then, unquote, "No, actually, people shouldn't fucking attack any other people at any time of day." And the reason, I mean, it's a good point in that people shouldn't attack, but it's one of these things I keep going back to is, unfortunately, it happens. So why teach people not walk home at any time of night? Actually, Damien said something quite relevant earlier on in the podcast, taking the other side of it, is when we were talking about pylons and everything. Just because someone said something stupid doesn't make it okay to pile on calling somebody a cunt. So I'm sort of taking the other side of this one, saying that just because people shouldn't be piling on saying you're a cunt doesn't mean you should be saying something stupid.
Well, yeah, don't walk down Rape Alley and all that.
Yeah. And we've talked about it on the podcast before.
It's two totally different pieces of advice, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. One is don't walk alone in the night. It's a different piece of advice than don't rape people.
They assume extremes are two different worlds. One of them is the ideal world where there are no rapists, and the other one is the horrible world where everyone is a rapist, and the reality is in the middle. So, you know.
Well, know your audience. Are you speaking with people who like to victimize other people? Is that your audience? In which case you say, hey, don't do that, guys, don't do that. Or are you speaking with people who are afraid to be attacked? In which case, I think it's okay to give them helpful tips on how not to be attacked.
In this case, I think her audience is a bunch of other people who will likely pat her on the back for saying this and then say something very similar, and then she'll pat them on the back and it will continue in perpetuity.
Mm. Yeah, it speaks very much to this whole we should be teaching boys not to rape thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, because we all know that boys left unchecked will rape by default.
I think it's good to teach people not to attack other people and take things from them violently. I think that's good to teach people that. But I think if you have to teach someone that, there's a chance that you might be raising a sociopath.
Yeah, but actually, I thought that was quite interesting the way that you phrased that there, because if you just call it attacking, and taking things in general is definitely applicable to children, because you do, because you're saying the urge to rape is not innate in men, which I totally agree with, but the urge to hit people and take toys off them is innate in children. So if you're throwing it out there in terms of how you socialize children by teaching them how to be with other people, then it is definitely something that you have to teach.
Well, you have to teach children that you can't just take what you want by force.
Yes.
And if they learn that when they're children, then hopefully when they grow up and they have sexual urges, they won't take what they want by force.
Yeah, that's a very interesting way to think about
it. No, it's quite a logical way of thinking about it. The problem with that is it doesn't suit the left-wing sort of agenda, which is rape is the be-all and end-all of crime. Everything else is secondary. Which I think the reason for that is because rape is very... I know it happens to men, but predominantly women are the victim.
As long as you're willing to ignore the prison statistics, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. That's always the tricky one, isn't it? With the prison statistics. But that again goes back to what is an innate urge, because why? I think this is one of my arguments always about anybody that's using rape and rape culture to derail proper conversations and arguments about it by throwing the words around in a sort of irresponsible way, is that we never seem to be having a conversation about why people actually do rape. And like prison rape, for example, what is that about? And you never seem to be seeing an interesting conversation about it. It's a conversation for another time, because I'm going a bit off topic here. Don't let me start a rant, because we were supposed to be judging stupid tweets, and John has to go for his birthday treat.
Oh, right. Sorry. Yeah, that's the sort of thing that's really difficult to go on record with, because if you do that, you will be attacked. If you start having a conversation about on that topic and you say, well, you know, according to Randy Thornhill, you're going to receive a tidal wave of social justice hate for doing that.
For trying to talk about why people rape.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, the feminist orthodoxy on this is that it's not that people want to have sex and they're taking it by force. It's that it's an act of control. You know, it's as Susan Brownmiller wrote, rape is a process by which all men keep all women in fear. Mm-hmm. For them, it's a social process. For them, like any Marxist theory, it's a social process of control, where one group keeps another group in bondage and subjugation. And that's obviously not true, but that's how a lot of feminists see that topic.
Well,
and they will be really angry with you if you conceptualize it in some other way.
But that's a very interesting point to me personally, because as people who've read my blog will know, when I was growing up, my mother ran the rape crisis helpline, and I have asked her why she did that, and her answer to that went very much against like what I would feel, because I would have a much more sympathetic, victim-centric approach to real rape victims. I'm very allergic to the non-real victims claiming it. But what she said was, because it was the 80s and the political movement at the time in feminism was that rape is not about sex, it's about men's power over women, and that was what I was fighting against. And she sat in that basement answering that phone and exposing herself to all that horror, not because of sympathy for the victim, but because she was part of a political backlash against male power. And that doesn't sit well with me at all. I was a bit like, oh my God, that's the least sympathetic thing I've ever heard anybody say. But that is what was going on with her when she was doing that at that time.
It's a horrifying way to view society, to think that all men are controlling all women by having a few men.
Of course, my mother doesn't think that.
It's a very disturbing concept. And of course, I could go on and on. This is a concept that's at the heart of a number of other feminist ideologies. If you read the original paper on objectification theory by Fredrickson and Roberts, it's at the core of that paper. It's at the core of any number of feminist theories are bankrupt intellectually, and if you dive deep into them, you will find these terrible ideas about how humanity works, these anti-humanistic ideas. But people don't, you know, they don't take the trouble to read up on
it. Why don't you and I do another podcast on that sometime?
Yeah, it would be great.
And let's let John off the hook.
He's giving us the eye. He's like,
He's starting to look distinctly unfocused.
No, it wasn't that. I was unfocused. I was just focusing on something else. No, I was getting the eye from Sally.
Yeah, we understand that. Damien, can you pick a stupid tweet of the week and then we'll say goodbye for now?
I'm going to go with the Annamar doll.
So whenever we have a male guest on, and I realise we've only had two guests and they've both been male, they always pick Zoe's tweets. It's funny that.
It's really weird.
Well, I don't feel the need to ingratiate myself to you. I'm not trying to get in your pants.
I thought you were so unbiased, though, and you didn't ingratiate yourself to anybody.
Well, I mean, okay, yeah.
No,
That's my story. That's my story. I'm sticking to it.
Well, as I already said at the beginning, I prefer to be an exception to that sort of rule.
The desire to get into pants trumps any logical thought processes any man has.
That's exactly.
So I win.
Yes. You win by virtue of your vagina.
Yep.
Excellent. I was promised that when I was born a girl, so it's nice to see
the vaginal trump card.
Nice to see that coming true.
It is always nice to see it coming.
Just quickly, I just wanted to add one thing on that whole rape thing. Do either of you listen to Adam Carolla when he was talking about how the left wing sort of conceptualizes rape, and they tried to get away from the idea that it was a sexual crime and that it was a violent crime, not a sexual crime, a violent crime. And he likes to do this like little improv bit where he's talking about it's just like mugging. There's nothing sexual about it. It's exactly like an attack or a mugging or a robbery or a theft where I come at the end, but nothing sexual about it whatsoever.
Yeah, it doesn't have an analog. It doesn't have an analog anywhere in crime, because there's nowhere else in crime where it strongly resembles something that people would do consensually for fun. There's nothing else like that. People don't. I mean, maybe
commit robberies recreationally.
Yeah, I mean, maybe assault and battery kind of looks like boxing, but I mean, that's not even that. Mm-hmm. You need to have an analog where, like, on the one hand, two people do this and it's a great time, and on the other hand, two people do this and one of them is enjoying it and the other one's really hating it. Like, there's no analog for that.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing like that, and so it is going to have a number of unique characteristics to it, and there's no getting around that, really.
Mm. Very interesting conversation.
Well, I didn't mean to drag us back into it, but I'm going to have to say goodbye. You two can carry on talking if you want, but I won't be recording it. Damien, okay. Thank you very much for being on the podcast. You can find Damien on the Oklahoma Atheist Godcast, which
we must plug, though, because that's
surprisingly
really
difficult
to
say. I didn't realize it was going to be that hard.
I also blog at Skeptic Inc.
Yep, and are you on another podcast? No, I must be thinking of someone else.
Yeah.
All these atheists mashing together. And you can also find him on Twitter on the rare occasions when he's not privated or protected.
Yeah, which will not be true here in a little bit. Well, have a happy birthday, man. Hope you feel better.
Retweet.
Oh, damn it.
I know, he's got to quickly, we've both got to get on there retweeting you for the next 10 minutes.
Unfortunately, I don't.
Thank you very much for coming on.
Literally ringing out the door now. So thank you everyone for listening.
Thank you so much, guys.
Good night, or good day, or good morning, or good afternoon. Good afternoon.
You're meaning like there's a scenario whereby somebody has just some kind of amazingly beautiful penis and you confront it with this picture of it and you're just like, wow.